Good morning, good evening, everyone. Nice to see you on screen. It was wonderful to be in Portugal and to see some of you. It's wonderful to see some of you in the morning. I've been staying with the koan over the past few days. And it's first of all, I really love koans because it's like a tool that we might kind of fall back on when there is a situation that we struggle with, and we can say, sometimes I feel, oh, it's a little bit like this koan. Or that situation is a koan in itself, but sometimes it feels like it applies, and find it's very relevant to learn it really by heart and really memorize it so that it's really embedded, so that at some other time, it might be very meaningful. And the funny thing is that there was a koan that kind of I kept going back to recently. And then when I looked at it today, it wasn't at all the kind of the thoughts that I followed on the koan was not at all what the koan is actually supposed to be about. So that was interesting, and I thought, well, there are many ways to see koans, and the koan that I stayed with, it had to do with, so then I looked it up and I found the proper version, but my memory of it had something to do with a student goes to a teacher and asks for the teacher for a practice, and the teacher says, have you finished breakfast? And then the student says, no, yes, I have. And the teacher says, well, then go wash your balls. That's kind of how I vaguely remembered it. And it applied to a very specific situation for me, it seemed. And the way I kind of understood it was, how do I leave no trace? Which is not too far away from the original koan. But how do I leave no trace? And it applied in that situation, in my really daily life. Because I may have a tendency to be a little bit messy, to leave things. And sometimes my wife is not too happy about that. And so it was about, you know, I've finished my plate. Can you put that in the dishwasher, please? Very practical, extremely practical. And we put it in the dishwasher, you know, it's like, don't leave it there. Also take it out and put it back. And so really just wash it so that there's no trace in a very, very, very practical level. But then I'm, as probably most of you, I'm very puzzled with our possible response to this ecological crisis. And when we do things, when we eat and when we take a shower and we live and we go from one place to another, it's, we leave traces. It has an impact. And how do we take that into account? And how do I make sure I don't leave traces, or as little traces as possible, as little imprints as possible? And I remember the story with the monks, the forest monks in Thailand, that are really careful where they step on to protect life, to be really that mindful about leaving no trace. And we do, and we always leave an imprint. But can we minimize it? And so I was starting to see the koan through the eyes also of it really calls for the quality of being mindful, being attentive, being caring, caring of the environment, of the context, of the people that I share the space with. So all kinds of qualities that with this practice we're trying to cultivate. And yesterday I was looking at a sutra. I was looking for a reference for a sutra because there is an image that really speaks to me. And it's a sutra from the Pali Canon, from the early Buddhist text, on cultivation. It's in the numerical discourses. And the image is the following. The text talks about how a chicken, a hen, for the eggs to develop, the chicken from time to time moves around the eggs in order to rearrange the eggs, just kind of shift them around, and that's how the process of I don't know how you call that, raising the eggs or cultivating the eggs, I don't know what's the proper term, but that's what happens. And so the eggs represents various qualities, mindfulness being one. And so loving kindness being another one, for example. And so we keep shifting around these things. Which brings me to a thread of thinking that has been also very present recently for me. Which is, we're moving these eggs around, and we're moving it because, like when a koan rises, comes up for you as a strong question, as a vivid question, is really just the how can I say? I feel it's right now, I feel it's so important to me that this practice is engaged. It is something that we really engage with, that we're really engaged with. And we're engaged in a sense of that we can look at it as, what is my question? What is it that I'm struggling with? What is the question that keeps coming back to me? What is the difficulty I keep banging my head on? Can I have a sense of a sense of questioning? And it obviously changes during the course of your week, your day, maybe by the hour, or maybe something. It's a question that kind of lasts. But in all these stories with the monks asking questions, you see that sometimes they have longing questions. What is reality? What is mind? What is enlightenment? What is the nature? What is my own true nature? This is the thing that keeps me awake. Looking back, I'm very grateful of the difficulties I had in the retreat in Belgium, which was a very difficult retreat for me, because there was a question that really, or a feeling that really caught my entire attention, and that really forced me to dwell into it, to look at it, to honestly look at it. So I feel it's very fruitful to think of what is it that we are struggling with. That's kind of one way to phrase it, or what's the question that inhabits us at that moment, at this moment. And is there a, can we phrase that into a question? Or can we take a koan and make it our own, you know, question that also can help us to to discover our own question. There was recently a White Plum meeting about koans with all the teachers, and one of the subject that was mentioned was how koan practice can become a little game. We know the tricks, we know the ins and outs, and we know how that works. I see that Bart is smiling. But can we also just make it more than that? Make it like a real question. And if the koan doesn't really speak to you, is that what's the question that really kind of that we can engage with, our own question? And so I had this whole thing about the washing the bowls and leaving no trace. So today I looked at the koan, and So it's actually, I didn't exactly, I had to look it up. I didn't quite know where it was. In fact, it's in the Mumen Can, and it's in the beginning of the Mumen Can. It's the seventh case, and the koan goes as follow. Once a monk made a request of Joshu. "I have just entered the monastery," he said. "Please give me instructions, master." Joshu said, "Have you had your breakfast?" "Yes, I have," replied the monk. "Then," said Joshu, "wash your bowls." The monk had an insight. As often, masters ask a question, and it's a little bit more profound than what it seems. Or maybe it's very simple, but we don't answer properly. Or we don't see what it's really pointing at. I had forgotten I had not forgotten, but I kind of like the phrase, "Please give me instructions." So here's a monk that enters a monastery and he wants a practice. And it's as I often say, well, he wants instructions for his practice. So for me, it also goes back to, what's my intention? What is it that I want to cultivate? And what are the possible means for me to cultivate what I want to cultivate. And Joshua said, "Have you had your breakfast?" So, what is Joshua really asking by saying that? Is he just really asking the guy, "Have you had just breakfast?" "Yes, I have," replied the monk. Then said Joshu, "Wash your bowls." "Have you had your breakfast?" What could that mean? Have you had really the experience that you wanted? Have you eaten sufficiently well? Are you satisfied? Reminds me who was it? Scott that mentioned that, I think, at the retreat in Belgium. He was mentioning that. Are you satisfied? He was referring to. Forgot what he was referring to. The question: are you satisfied? Do you want more? Have you had your breakfast? Yes, I have. Then wash your bowls. Sweep it away. Swipe it away. Just clean it. Don't get attached to it. there is for me something very beautiful about the, you know, this, if we really kind of at the same time take it literally and take it metaphorically for what that is, what it's pointing at, it's really, we have breakfast every single day and we have to wash our bowls every single day. We need to just let go of just prepare for the next meal, prepare for whatever's coming next, coming from what arises. I just had about an hour ago, I had a meeting with the people from the Body College, and I had a talk with Martin Batchelor. And we were talking about that expression that we so often use in, and I feel very, very often that it can be very misleading when we talk about, oh, seeing reality as it is. And she was mentioning the how that expression comes from the Pali expression, which I can't remember, doesn't matter. But in fact, she was saying it's a little bit not really how reality is, but really how reality arises, which makes much more sense. Because, I mean, not much more sense, but which is less misleading, let's put it that way, for me. If we feel that, you know, seeing things as things are, it feels like almost something is getting fixed. We're getting fixed on a position somewhere. Whereas if we can see things as they arises, it's obviously changing all the time what arises. So we're not stuck anywhere. So once we have finished that meal, we saw how things, we had that experience, whatever that experience is, we wash the bowls, and then something else comes up. Something else arises. So I looked at the commentaries in the Mumenkan in the book. So it said absolutely nothing with what I kept having in mind about the leaving no trace, and yet it for me it does make sense that leaving no trace, not being fixed. It goes with not being fixed anywhere, seeing things as they arise and keep going back to it. So really that's the instruction that Joshu is giving this monk. Witness whatever arises and don't get stuck anywhere. That's your practice. And I don't think we end up seeing reality as reality is. We end up seeing reality as it arises. And it changes all the time and we don't get fixed anywhere. And I think we can, if we bring it bring it down a notch and take it kind of even more literally, I hear in this koan something about a dimension of caring, of mindfully caring for things. Maybe a little bit of a stretch, but that's, for me, it echoes that. When I was on holiday last week, I had friends over and they were rinsing the, we have a dishwasher and we had finished eating and we were cleaning up and these guys were rinsing the plates before putting it in the dishwasher. And I said, oh, don't worry. You know, no, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do that. And I was kind of worried because it's in the south of France. There is a shortage of water. And I felt, and they were like kind of letting the water run. So I was a little bit worried about that. And then I remembered the story about Maizumi Roshi doing exactly that, and someone saying exactly what I had said, and Maizumi Roshi saying something to the effect of, I'm taking care of the dishwasher. I care for the dishwasher. I was caring also for the water, actually, for the running of the water. It wasn't out of laziness that I was saying that. Maybe a little bit. And I don't know, bringing that koan towards ecology and how do we respond, for me it makes a lot of sense. So I know it kind of diverged a little bit from the original meaning of the koan, but that's my take on it for the day. And really responding to our ecological crisis requires a lot of mindfulness, a huge sense of caring, a sense of seeing the oneness and the interdependence of the world, action. Requires, yeah, wholesome action. I mean, we can look at we could read the precepts through the lenses of the ecological crisis to give us clues about how to answer the precepts also, the vows also. How do I, take care of this life? How do I was thinking also, you know, leaving no trace, leaving no imprints, leaving no negative imprint. But also, I think it also has to do on a different level that practice is about also, we talked about that in one of our study group, cultivating good karma, cultivating good action, appropriate action, also wholesome action. So actually leaving a wholesome imprint also. So leaving no trace in the sense of not getting stuck, not being stuck anywhere. Leaving a trace, an imprint in the sense of wholesome karma, wholesome action, beneficial action. We're back with the eggs and shifting the eggs around and see how that works for us, you know, depending on our situation. Let's open up. See if you have any comments on that, because
I want to thank you, Joa, for bringing up this Koan. And it's like there is still more things to discover. The more you listen to a Koan, you think you know something, but there is still more things to discover. So I felt it fresh and new. Really new. And it's because words have a lot of meaning that we need people like teachers like you. Because Dhamma, it means teaching, but it means the word as it is. It means phenomena. It has both senses. So the teaching is what it is. It has both sense, both meanings. Always.
Yeah, and phenomenon, it's really things that arises, right? And so really just I really valued when Martin said what arises, it really clicked with this discomfort I have sometimes with the expression that we use so often, you know, things as they are. So really, yeah, phenomenon, yeah, and Dhamma, it's true. I love that. I love that, you know. Listening to the Dhamma, listening to the teaching, but also listening to the world. And that's that's actually, yeah, going back to the koan, you know. Have you had your breakfast? Yeah, Bart?
Yeah, thank you for relating it to the climate crisis, the ecological crisis. That situation is sometimes so overwhelming, so not understandable in any way, so big. I think overwhelming is the best word for it. And I think this answer of Joshu points me towards what I can do right now, which is the obvious before me is washing my bowls. Just that. It's like Samu.
And there are many ways to wash our bowls also. We can just keep the water running and just not paying attention and Joanna.
Hello. So good to be here. Thank you so much for bringing this koan. I felt when we were talking about the bowls and washing the bowls and just not getting ready, but open up to the next moment, I felt like a lot of space opened up in me, myself. So it was really interesting to see that, which didn't last long, it never does. But it's just like this flow of things as well. I think I feel very overwhelmed about the climate crisis and everything. And I feel very angry about it as well, because I feel powerless and powerless, as in, I don't think it's like saving, this is my belief, I don't know how well informed I am, but I don't feel like there's much I can do to stop it, in a sense that it's just the rich and the big corporations that are not doing anything to stop it, and the governments, and like we as individuals, I don't know how much we can actually do. Like, I don't think, like, it's like my 5 minute or my 10 minute bath that's going to change anything. Well, now I'm very skeptical of that, which doesn't help, because I'm feeling like less hopeful and less hopeful by day. And that, it's not very positive, because I think it kind of creates like this entropy of doing less and less and less, or feeling more overwhelmed each day. So, but it was a good way to look at it, because also the vow of vow to refrain from killing, it's also one that I stayed with a lot, because it's impossible for us to live without killing, but at least we should be mindful and trying to do the less harm as possible. So in that sense, I think that's something that we can, aspire to do. Yeah. And as in not leaving no trace, as in killing the least as possible, as in watching our steps. That was good. Thank you so much.
It's nice to see you online, Joanna. Yeah, it reminds me, I love when we do the Orioki, the 72 laborers brought us this food. I should know how it comes to us. And, if we think in terms of ecology, I was listening to a show on Sunday, and they were like roasting. They went to a place in the east part of France where they were roasting coffee, and the guy was like very proud to say, yeah, I'm using a machine that is really from the 60s, and we put some coil in it. And I was thinking, wow, the process and the coil, I mean, is that really good? And thinking about, and they were also talking about the I don't know how you say that in English, the légumes de printemps, the spring vegetables, which are very small. And the guy was saying, actually, from the nutrition point of view, it's extremely poor, actually, because it hasn't had time to grow. So originally it was really for the rich people, and it was like kind of a luxury good. And using that and then cooking it, and the way you cook it, and like looking at the whole steps. And so 72 labors is, I mean, it's probably even way more. And we should also add, what's the energy that has been consumed in the process of these ingredients to come to my bowl. And let's be aware of that. Let's be mindful of that. And again, going back to, this is one of the quality that we are cultivating intensely the mindfulness. This is really at the core of our practice. But it's not, obviously, it's not this, it's not the only quality that we develop. Yeah, see you.
I vow to refrain to leave no trace. I'm hearing my neighbors, a young couple. They have two children, two little girls. And they are so, they put all the plastic things inside the normal garbage. They don't separate the things. They passed all this behavior to the little girls. And I become aggressive when I see that. All the time, under meters, we have all the recycling places. It's not a big thing to go there, to make a little walk with these child to make that. And I feel, I decided to become calm and to write something to everybody in this building and put, I need to write this of a kind way because I don't want that they become aggressive against me. I want that they understand that they are part of this world. They are educating two kids, and they I decided to do that. I need to become a little bit not so aggressive with this behavior, and to talk of a kind way with them. And help them to leave no, not so big traces.
Listening to you all makes me think that, I mean, we share that concern, and that can be a koan, a question, something that we work with, because also it triggers our anger, it triggers our anxiety, it triggers all these emotions. And that's, if that is alive for us, that is a question that we can, from which we can just really, anchor ourselves and practice the Dharma, practice these teachings from that angle, because that is the thing that gets us to our bones. And I really feel that there is a possibility to use the practice that we have developed to really not just like get enlightened, whatever, or be more, but really on very precise questions, on very precise questions. It actually, when you were talking, Sue, suddenly I remembered of the Bernie Glassman, I think it's in Bearing Witness, where at some point, I think it was for his 50th birthday, he sat down in Washington in front of the White House, and he wanted to do something for the homeless, I think, or I think that was his question. And he sat with that Cohen, what can I do for these people? What's the appropriate answer? And that, I think his answer was, I'm not sure if it was the peacemaker thing, or maybe it was the question was peace. I don't know what his question was, but what I remember, it was this strong thing, like for his birthday, he sat down and he said, I'm not gonna get up before I get an answer about what am I gonna do. But from the using all the tools he had in terms of practice, in terms of mindfulness, in terms of not being stuck anywhere, in terms of seeing things as one, seeing the oneness of things, and you know, it's basically embodying the three tenets of the peacemaker, unknowing, bearing witness, and loving action. And so that's a very practical way to embody our practice, really. Or like to apply a practice in our lay life in a very wholesome way. Yeah, Christine?
Yeah, I just sort of thought about a memory that came up. When I was a child, I almost felt guilty to exist because of my ecological imprint. You know, I couldn't understand how mankind could be so careless with the earth, and I would see myself cause, you know, plastic use and whatever just by existing. So nobody taught me really, but I had a really deep understanding or set so much love for nature and really caring about nature. And then when I was a teenager, we went to France and I was in a family and we went to a shop, and in Germany, everybody had his own bags, carrying them to the shop and getting your stuff in your own bags. And they were just using plastic bags in masses. So I was really shocked by that. So things evolve. Now I find a lot of, also in France, people take their own bags and don't use anymore the plastic bag for everything you buy in. But it's what can we do and how can we make it concrete, what practices is revealing to us, the 72 labors. Yeah, it's surely more what we have in our plate when we eat. It's without end how much everything is interconnected and implies other people working and producing stuff. And oh yeah.
It makes me think, Christine, that also we should even mention, you know, how it brought us this food, but also what's going to happen with the food afterwards. and all the implications of it also. It goes in both directions. It comes in and it goes out, and it implies a lot of business afterwards.
Yeah.
Also, so it's like the whole sequence is huge in terms of
and with the food we don't eat but that has been cooked, and you know, when my son was once here for lunch with his friends, they had some lessons that some teachers were absent, and so I said, I take the responsibilities, they come with me. And so I invited them to eat and I made them food. And I really, you know, very mindful about what do I have in the fridge and how much do I cook. And we have a dog, and I mean, we really, and we have compost, and I hardly throw away any food. But those kids, they eat in the canteen normally. They are used to just throw away what they didn't eat, you know. So somebody didn't eat the vegetables on his plate, and one of the boys they are really lovely, and he wanted to help, and so he put the vegetables in the trash bin. He said, no, don't throw away. The dog will eat that, you know. But for him, that was just what would happen to food that you don't eat, you know? And yeah.
Well, it's nice to remember that Orioki means just enough.
Yes.
It's a good practice.
Yes. And you drink the last drop, you don't throw anything away, or you honor until the last drop what you had in your bowl. So
yeah,
it's really a beautiful ritual.
Yeah, Joanna.
Sorry, I just want to say something really quickly about what Christine was saying about feeling guilty, about the impact and everything, because I've heard it was actually BP who invented like the carbon footprint idea just to get out, just so they could have all the guilt out of their backs, basically. So they would make us responsible for what's actually their mess, as the same as, you know, all the plastic that Coca-Cola produces is not really our fault. It's just, yeah, I just wanted to point that out because I feel like we as individuals take so much responsibility for what's actually like big corporations doing, and yeah. But obviously I understand, yeah, I feel the same. I feel exactly the same. Even now I feel very guilty about existing, and sometimes it's really overwhelming, but I think it's like something that kind of grounds me a bit, feeling like it wasn't me. Well, it's obviously me, but it's not only me. I don't know, sorry.
Well, you have a couple of good koans in there, Joanna. All right, so we'll stop here. Thank you so much for sharing, listening.